Tom, thanks for being with us today.
Hey, Aaron, good to be with you.
So let's start at the top and work our way down locally with the presidential race. Obviously, a year and a half out from it, but the race is starting to shape up a little bit more, seems like every single week. So where do things stand right now as far as that goes?
Well, Joe Biden still has a very commanding lead in the Democratic race, followed by Bernie Sanders, but certainly Biden is sort of in a class of his own. Sanders is closer to the rest of the pack than he is to Biden. And Biden being first and Sanders being second isn't something that has really changed much over time. I'd say the biggest winner in the last month in the presidential polling in terms of somebody who's been able to improve their standing is Elizabeth Warren. Mm-hmm. She's gone from sort of being in also-ran status up to being in third place in several new national polls that have come out this week. One that I think is particularly emblematic of that is a Quinnipiac poll that came out this week. In March, they had Warren at 4%, and now they have her at 13%. So she's seen a 9-point increase in her support. There was also a Fox News poll this week that had her moving into third place. So she seems to have the momentum, such as it is in the race right now, besides, of course, Biden, who's consistently been in first place. The only person who I would say has sort of had a decline in momentum in recent weeks is Pete Buttigieg. He's now in fifth place in that new Quinnipiac poll at 5%. Whereas he'd had 10% when they did a poll in April. And that's not to say that Buttigieg is doing poorly by any means. It's still amazing in this very large field for the mayor of a small city to be in the top five like he is. But his momentum does seem to have stalled a little bit from the way it was building in late April and early May.
And fourth place in that poll is Kamala Harris, right? How is she doing in other surveys?
She's pretty consistently in that third to fifth place sort of range. There does seem to be a pretty clear right now across most polls, a pretty clear top five. That is Biden and Sanders in that order, and then Warren, Harris, and Buttigieg in some order or another. So, to the extent you can say there's separation when it's so far away from any actual voting and there's so many people running, those are the five who seem to be getting more traction than anybody else.
Obviously, for Democratic voters heading into 2020, one of the biggest concerns is going to be nominating someone who is quote-unquote electable, who can beat Donald Trump in the general election. To what extent should that be a concern for Democratic voters looking to make their choice in the primary? And to what extent are all of the candidates going to be pretty much equally electable no matter who ends up getting the nomination?
Well, I really think that all the candidates are pretty much equally electable. Anytime that we test a bunch of the Democrats against Donald Trump, Donald Trump's percentage is the same, more or less, against all the Democrats. If we do a national poll, Trump will be getting 41 or 42% no matter what Democrat we test against him. The Democrats get varying levels of support, but that's largely proportional to their name recognition, more so than to people being more willing to vote for some of them than the others. So I've seen some people sort of theorizing, and I don't know the extent to which this is true or not, but I've seen some people theorizing that the only reason Biden's doing so well in the Democratic primary polling right now is because Democrats perceive him to be the most electable candidate, and they want to win so badly that even if Biden wouldn't be their first choice, they'll vote for him because they think he has the best chance of beating Trump. My advice definitely to voters at this point would be vote for whoever you like, vote for whoever you want. Anybody who's going to be strong enough to emerge from this huge field of Democratic candidates and win the nomination is going to be strong enough to possibly beat Trump in the fall, given how poor and consistently poor Trump's approval numbers have been. One thing I saw this week that was interesting was there was all this speculation that after Bob Barr came out with his letter in March, sort of summarizing the Mueller report and claiming that Trump had been exonerated, that we would then see some big increase in Trump's approval rating. Trump's aggregate approval rating right now is actually lower than it was 2 months ago when Barr came out with that letter. So definitely not seeing much indication of Trump's position improving, and that means that all the Democrats have a good shot.
speaking with Tom Jensen. PublicPolicyPolling.com is the website for more information on the national and state level. See a lot of issues heading into the 2020 presidential race. One of the issues that's now getting a lot of discussion and traction that's oftentimes kind of behind the scenes and not getting as much discussion is the issue of abortion, with Alabama, Georgia, and quite a few other states either proposing or passing laws that are very clearly designed to challenge Roe v. Wade directly and create cases to get the Supreme Court at least to consider striking down Roe v. Wade and throwing the door open for more state laws. What is public opinion on that overall?
Well, there's really no appetite for overturning Roe v. Wade. CBS had a new poll this week where they asked about that issue. 28% of voters in the country said Roe v. Wade should be overturned. 67% said keep it as it is. And something that was very notable on that poll when you look at the crosstabs is that even Republicans are very evenly divided on whether Roe v. Wade should be overturned or not. 48% say overturn it, 45% say keep it as it is. So it's ever so narrowly in support of overturning. But then you look at Democrats, 87-11, keep it as it is. Independents, 66-28, keep it as it is. There's really not any sort of public outcry for overturning Roe v. Wade. And there's very few people, you know, we've been talking about this, as you've referenced a lot recently, in the context of the law that was passed in Alabama last week that effectively banned all abortions. On the CBS poll, they asked people what their sort of general view on abortion is, and only 20% said that abortion should be completely illegal. 44% said it should be generally available, and 34% said it should be available with somewhat stricter limits, but only 20% for anything sort of resembling what Alabama did.
One of the things that I've seen, and this has been kind of the case across a lot of American history, is when the Supreme Court hands down a really big, high-profile decision, regardless of the rightness or wrongness of the decision. You can think about Roe v. Wade, Brown versus Board of Education, recent decisions on gay rights. There are a lot of other kind of similar cases along those lines. In terms of the political ramifications of it, the benefit, the kind of the immediate short-term benefit politically in terms of who ends up being advantaged or disadvantaged in the upcoming election always ends up being on the side of whoever loses that Supreme Court case, just because the backlash against the decision is really strong, at least at first. Is that something that you're seeing now in terms of the polling on this? If the Supreme Court strikes down Roe v. Wade, will it have an impact in 2020?
Yeah, it'll definitely have the potential to. And it's also a great example of sort of Trump getting lost in the message that he needs to be pushing and sort of getting off on other tangents that aren't good for him. If Trump is going to be reelected, he's going to be reelected because there's a strong economy and because voters credit him for there being a strong economy. I don't know if that's going to be the case with the economy a year and a half from now. But if Trump is going to win, that's what's going to have to happen, is that there's going to have to be perceptions of a strong economy and perceptions of Trump deserving credit for it. But instead of sort of keeping focused on the fact that at least right now the economy is good on a lot of fronts, Republicans go off on this abortion tangent where two-thirds of voters are against them. And this is sort of, I think, in some ways, the biggest impediment to Trump being able to be successful next year, is that there's just always these sort of extraneous distractions on social issues and those kinds of things where voters completely stand against the Republicans. And the more those are in the focus, the harder things are going to be for Republicans. And then those end up sort of being the center of attention instead of things like the economy, where Trump might actually be able to get some traction.
Speaking with Tom Jensen again, Public Policy Polling. Going down to the state level, Tom Tillis, Republican U.S. Senator, is going to be running for re-election in 2020. We've talked a bunch of times about how close an election that's going to be in the general, as purple a state as North Carolina is. That's probably going to be decided by 1 or 2 points. But now there is a potential primary challenger for Tom Tillis as well, in businessman Garland Tucker. And I don't know how much traction it's really getting yet in terms of the media coverage, but I know that we at WCHL have been getting a barrage of emails from both sides accusing the other of being the most anti-Trump candidate and holding up their own guys being the most pro-Trump candidate. So there's definitely a lot of interest, and there's going to be a lot of talk about the primary in North Carolina heading into 2020. That's going to get a lot of play as well. Where do things stand as far as that goes in terms of Tillis's chances of getting the nomination versus his chances of being primaried out?
Well, there's been a lot of volatility in Tillis's approval numbers over the course of this year, but something that is a constant is that he is definitely at the very best soft with Republicans. You could even make an argument he's weak with Republicans, but best case for him, he's soft. In January, we found that 45% of Republicans approved of the job Tillis was doing, 25% disapproved. So certainly a plus 20 net approval rating. You're probably not going to lose the primary, but under that 50% mark, that's generally considered to be safe for a politician. When Tillis initially indicated that he was going to vote against Trump on his national emergency resolution, Tillis all of a sudden had a very negative approval rating with Republican voters. A lot more Republicans in the wake of that said that they disapproved than approved of Tillis, because at the end of the day, Trump is incredibly popular with North Carolina Republicans, and you really just can't be crosswise with him and expect to be in good shape. Tillis ended up flipping his vote on the national emergency resolution, and since then his numbers with Republicans have strengthened some, and I think he'll ultimately win a Republican primary, but I think it is going to give whoever the Democratic candidate ends up being just that much more of a sort of path to winning a victory to have Republicans divide it. I think Tillis will win the primary, but I would not be surprised to see him end up losing 35% or 40% of the vote in a primary election. And that's sort of a weakened position to be in going into what I expect is going to be a tough general election against whoever the Democrats end up nominating.
publicpolicypolling.com for more numbers from PPP. You can also find them on Twitter at PPP Polls for more information there. Speaking with Tom Jensen, and Tom, as we wrap up this conversation, and you're also the Tar Heel baseball super fan, and the ACC tournament's going on in Durham. UNC got a win yesterday against Virginia. Miami coming up tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock. I know you're going to be there at the game. What do you think about the Tar Heels heading into that game to see who goes to the semis?
Well, I really think UNC is going to have to win the ACC tournament to host a regional. So hopefully the team can get as much fan support as possible tomorrow against Miami at 3. If they win, they'll play Boston College in the semifinals Saturday at 1. And if they win that, they'll play in the championship game Sunday at noon. There was a good Tar Heel crowd there last night, and I'm sure it would help them to have that all weekend.
Tom Jensen, as always, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Aaron. Take care.